Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, how are you?
I'm good. Have I ever mentioned to you that I love your theme music?
Oh, the Brass Bonanza, buddy, on Fridays?
I love it. I absolutely love it.
It's our theme for Positive Fridays, because it's virtually impossible not to get in a good mood when you hear the music.
I hear you. But it's my favorite. Of all the shows I go on, this is my favorite music.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's your favorite show. It probably is, too.
Listen, I love coming on your show. But I'll tell you this. There might be some that are tied with you, but nobody's ahead of you.
Okay, what are you, a politician now? Okay, I don't need any of that stuff, but I'll take it. Craig, the interesting, as we get closer, there's been a lot of people wondering, what's the chance of Jack Eichel long-term being a better player than Connor McDavid? People want, like, how big is the gap in your mind? And is it too hard to tell?
Let's put it this way. Okay, let me tackle this in another way. I guess with a lot of talk, people want to go on it. We're talking about franchise centermen, okay? And we're talking about, think about Evgeny Malkin. Evgeny Malkin's won a Hart Trophy. He's the most valuable player in the league. He scored 50 goals. He has won a scoring championship. He's won a Stanley Cup. I mean, is he better than Crosby? I don't think so. But is it close? Yeah, it's close. But I mean, would Malkin be as good without Crosby? And I'm not suggesting that he wouldn't be. But I mean, when you're even having a discussion, I think what it tells you is this: is Jack Eichel is so good. But if Jack Eichel is better than Connor McDavid long run, I can only tell you this, that Jack Eichel far exceeded my expectations. And that's not I think he's terrific. I think he'd go first in any draft since Crosby. And that includes Stamkos and Tavares and all those guys. But if he's better than McDavid, wow, the Buffalo Sabres got one heck of a player.
Yeah, I would. Now, the other leads
McDavid. I could go the other way. I could say, well, then McDavid must have really failed. Not happening.
No.
It's not happening.
Yeah. That leads us to the Arizona Coyotes at number three. And, Don Maloney, he's fielding calls because, of course, he is. And, this happens every year. And, rarely do we see the top five picks get moved. It's happened, but, not. And first of all, not for a ton of return anyway. But looking at that number three pick, Dylan Strome, Mitch Marner, how would those guys rate, Craig, to previous number one picks in the last two or three years? Because if everyone says Eichel and McDavid are generational guys, we haven't heard that term in quite some time. So where would Strome and Marner compare to, the 2013, 14, 12, 11, 10 type of top one or two picks?
Well, I don't see him being better than Aaron Ekblad, and I go back through that. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon is a terrific player. I think Seth Jones is a terrific player. I just don't see them, surpassing those guys. Maybe you could go back to 2012 and say they're in the discussion there, but I still think it's a little bit too early. I mean, let's not forget that, Neil Yakupov was pretty darn good in his rookie year, the lockout shortened year. And, I think it's a cautionary tale. You got to let players get to that 22, 23 year of age when everybody's kind of now in the same group and the same maturity level. And it takes players time. And to me, you got to be ultimately – It's a test of your patience to understand if your projection was right, but you got to be patient with it. I think that too many times people are too quick to anoint and too quick to write off.
Yeah, very well said. I would agree with that. The writing off thing. I think the writing off one now is almost worse. If a kid's drafted in 3 years after his draft, he's not an all-star. They're that was a terrible pick. And I totally agree with you there that. In most cases, we're looking at 5 years, especially for any of the picks after the first round.
Yeah, well, certainly. But why don't we just go back? Let's go back to the 09 draft. John Tavares was the first pick, and Hedman went second, okay? So, there was you can debate, okay, 6'6" defenseman, and he was unique. But if you go back and look, 2 years into Victor Hedman's career, maybe they should have taken Matt Duchene. Good thing that the Islanders didn't take Hedman because John Tavares is so far ahead of him. I'll just tell you this, okay? If the Islanders had Victor Hedman, they'd be in just as good a shape as if they had John Tavares. And that Tampa Bay Lightning would be in just as good a shape if they had Tavares instead of Hedman. And here we are. You know, let's keep in mind, we're 5 years, 6 years removed. This draft will be 6 years from the 09 draft. Be careful. Be careful about making assessments too quick.
Craig, I'm sure you get asked about your Noah Hanifin ranking more than any other player, it seems, because and I love the fact that you're like, everyone's like, well, everybody else has him. Who cares what everyone else says? You know what? And it's not like you don't like Noah Hanifin. You just don't think his offensive potential is worthy of a number three or four pick, correct?
And I'm so, like, thank you, thank you. You just became my favorite, okay? You just moved into a clear-cut win for first now. Because you see, people think, oh, why don't you? I like Noah Hanifin. You're right. I do like him. But I don't like him more than Werenski or Provorov. And exactly for what you said. And let me go a little bit deeper on this. Okay. What I think, I look at players and I look at them as developmental weaknesses and inherent weaknesses. So when I look at Zach Werenski, developmentally what he needs is more initiative defensively, using his skating, using his brains, you know, to be more competitive defensively. And I think that with development, that's going to come. I think what Noah Hanifin has is inherent weakness because you don't develop vision. You don't develop offensive instincts and awareness. So, well, yes, like Noah Hanifin is really competitive defensively and really good using his size and his competitive defensively. I don't think he has what Werenski has. And I think Werenski can be developed. I don't think what Hanifin needs can be developed. And I've used the example of Jay Boumeester. I think Jay Boumeester is a very good defenseman. He's won an Olympic gold medal. I'd want him on my team, but he's not an elite number one defenseman.
Craig Button joined us. Craig, one interesting one. In this draft, everyone talks about how deep it is. What about some overage guys, you know, who were bypassed once, like a Trevor Cox, for instance, somebody like that? Like, do you see some guys who you feel could really turn out to be Tanner Pearsons or Andrew Shaw type guys in this draft?
Yeah, I do. I'll start right in the Quebec League with Connor Garland. I mean, Connor Garland, who won the Quebec League scoring championship, from the Massachusetts area, played against Eichel. He might have played with him a little bit when they were younger, but, you know, not tall, but really competitive, really a determined offensive player. He's got a little bit of an edge to him. I go to Ontario, Andrew Mangiapane. You know, he went through the draft last year. Every game I go to in Barrie, he's got the puck all night long. He's a guy that holds the puck and makes plays with the puck. Tim McGauley in Brandon. I mean, the second leading scorer in the Western Hockey League after Bjorkstrand took hold of it after he returned from the World Junior. So those are three players that in their last year, well, not the last year, McGauley is, the other two aren't, but they've all been bypassed in a draft. And those are three guys that I definitely think, I mean, Dryden Hunt with the Medicine Hat Tigers. He's another player that I think deserves. I'll be shocked if all four of those guys aren't drafted, Jason. And I think it's very important in scouting to keep an open mind. It doesn't mean that anybody missed them.
Yeah.
It just means that maybe they didn't show enough to convince teams that they should have been drafted. I think those four players have shown now that they are deserving of being drafted. And I'll be shocked if they aren't.
One guy closer to home in the Western League from the PA Raiders, Reed Gardner, who, he had an outstanding start to the 2013-14 season. Then his offense took a big dip, and he ended up not getting drafted. I know you've got him ranked. What kind of happened to Gardner last year, and how's he turned it around this year?
Well, it's a good question. There's another example. And obviously, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And I think, I don't know what happened with Reed. I mean, he was another player that you sit down, come on, sixth round, fifth round, the way he scores. And I thought he showed this year. I think he's a really good, well-rounded player. I don't think he's just a goal scorer. I think he can think, he can make plays, he can kill penalties. So he's another player that I think is deserving of being drafted. And another, I was shocked last year he wasn't drafted. I'll be even more shocked this year if he isn't drafted. Probably, I think the biggest thing with Reed this year is he just focused in on being a player and focused in on playing. And, you know, you can only do some, you can't knock people over the head. You just keep playing and keep showing that you're a good player, and somebody's going to take notice, and I think that'll be the case with Reed Gardner.
As we get closer, Craig, you being in that GM chair, it's always interesting to listen to the deals before. But I know that a few years ago we did see the Carter and the Richards draft trades go down on the Wednesday right before the draft, 2 days before. That could happen this year. Are you expecting, like, when we see the rankings, and, you know, a lot of people have majority of the same guys within four or five spots, right? Whether you've got Werenski 8 or 12, to me, I'm not sure there's that big of a difference.
Right.
I'm guessing a lot of the teams probably have the exact same difference. Do you think we will see a lot more movement because of that?
Yeah, I think there'll be movement. I don't know if there's a lot more. I mean, what ultimately ends up happening, everybody has their list. And as the draft starts to unfold, you know, you start to go, well, geez, we need to get this guy. We need to get this guy. We have him high on our list. So you're trying to maneuver to get up. Sometimes you do and you don't get, sometimes you're not, you do and you get your guy. Sometimes you don't and you get your guy. And sometimes you're not able to move up. And you don't, and you don't get who you thought you were going to get. Sometimes they fall to you, and you have to look at it and go, what's the price to move up, and is there another player in that category? But I think with the cap, with where the cap is going to be basically flat, and I don't think we should expect that to change over the next number of years because the broadcast money is in. And I don't see a big significant increase in a big revenue area that I see. Maybe expansion changes that, but right now I don't see anything significantly changing. So I think now teams with cap room are going to maneuver, you know, perhaps trade a pick to get a player, and, you know, teams that are maybe on the other side of the equation, they're looking to acquire some draft picks. To try to move out an older player. I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks are a perfect example. And it's not that they want to move out players. They're going to have to move out players.
Yeah.
And you can't move out players for like players with salary. You're going to have to move them for draft picks. So it's about finding those fits and those mixes and making good on them. And I think that that's exactly what's going to happen in this year's draft.
Jordan Papurni for Brandon, of course, you know, they went all the way to the Western League final as a goaltender. Is he a guy that, is he a goaltender somebody would take this year?
I would think so. He might not fall into the surprise category. I thought he was worthy of being drafted last year, but I can understand him not being drafted. But I think he showed this year that he's capable of being a very good goaltender, that he's got a lot of really good growth ahead of him. And certainly I think that if you're not picking in that first two, three rounds of the draft in a goaltender, I think he fits into that next category of goaltender that's definitely worthy of being drafted. And you let him develop and you let him see how far he can go with in terms of working with him. And he's got another year in Brandon on a team that's going to be very, very good.
One last one, Craig. I have my theory on why we don't see a ton of offer sheets in the NHL. What's yours?
I don't know. I could play the game with you. What's yours? But here's what I think. The theory on using an offer sheet as a tool to acquire players has doesn't work. It doesn't work. So, you know, everybody can talk about putting in an offer sheet, but you just can't acquire players because the players you're going after are players that teams are just not going to give up. And whether it's Thomas Vanek or whether in the past with the Keith Tkachuks or the Joe Sakics, I mean, the Colorado Avalanche were in major financial straits when the Rangers offered a $15 million signing bonus, and they couldn't get them. Yes, Dustin Penner moves, but largely in part, offer sheets don't work because you can't acquire the player. If you could acquire the player, you'd see more of them. But I think teams look at it and go, we just can't get the player.
Yeah, because a team, the guys that are getting offer sheeted usually are like Brandon Saad, for instance.
Exactly. If
he does, right? Like Chicago knows how valuable he is, and while they will try to use whatever resources they have in their benefit to just sign him themselves, but the minute some team jumps at it, you're like, well, we know how important he is. We'll give away someone else on our roster rather than Brandon Saad.
Well, you know, yeah, and you're right, and I think there's a way you're and so you can't afford to let Brandon Saad go, so. you know, the other part of this too, like you know, people say it's only three first round draft picks, but every and they don't matter. Oh, really? Why is just about every player that everybody wants to go after a first round draft pick? If they don't matter, why are these first round draft picks, you know, being offer sheeted? I mean, Saad is an exception. The other thing too, and I'll say this, you got to look at it in ways of how you can acquire the player. And if you want to use it as a player acquisition tool, like I think about a guy like PK Subban a couple of years ago. So he's going into that bridge year, right? Whatever it is, that was the time to offer sheet him. And to me, I would try to approach it in this way. We're going to offer sheet you for 1 year. We're going to overpay you for 1 year. And you're going to tell the team, guess what? You know what? We're offer sheeting him, and you can't trade that player for 1 year. And next summer, we're going to offer sheet him again. So let's make a deal. Like Shea Weber, look at how much money was put on the table for Shea Weber.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, put all that money on the table for 1 year. Why not do it for 1 year? Because now you got a chance. Because now, what can Nashville do? They can't trade the player. They would have been stuck with unrestricted free agency. They would have been able to do anything with Shea Weber. You know, it was either match or trade with the Philadelphia Flyers. And it's not so much the offer sheet per se. It's the threat of an offer sheet and the offer sheet mechanism to try to acquire the player perhaps in a different way.
So do you think a GM then would call Boston and say, okay, let's try to make a trade or we're going to offer sheet Hamilton? Or do you just say you don't give Boston the option to know, you just send out the offer sheet?
Well, that's what, let me use the example of Weber. That's what Philadelphia tried to do. That's what Philadelphia said. They said to Nashville, we want to make a trade because we're going to offer sheet them. Right. And so you better be prepared for this. And of course that, well, we're going to match it and you don't have to worry about it. But when you go and just put in an offer sheet, and yes, it was lots of money, it was long-term security for Shea Weber. But to me, Philadelphia made it easy for, maybe not easy is the right word, but they made it easier for them to match it. If you go to them and say, we're giving you a $14 million contract and $13 million of it is a signing bonus, and guess what? Next summer, he's a free agent. You can't get anything for him next summer. Nothing. But we're prepared to give you something for him right now. Like I said, it's the offer sheet mechanism to try to get the player. I think that's the way you got to try to work it. I don't think it's the long-term contract that gets the guy. I think you got to put teams in a bind where they look at all or nothing.
Craig, excellent to talk to you. We'll see you in a few weeks. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. Have a great day.